This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 35 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, we continue to receive a lot of feedback from our listeners, including many questions and lots of good topic ideas.
Yeah, we seem to be filled with listener mail, which is really why we're calling this episode Listening to You. We're going to talk a little bit of the news because we can't avoid it, but the rest of it, we're going to be talking about the stuff you folks have been sending in, and it's a lot and really good stuff. Our topics tonight are drones, blue fins, not the tuna kind, and Malaysia Flight 370. The UK CAA convicts on illegal use of drones, and you, our listeners, and all of this mail. Well, Max, before we get started, we got breaking news today in the drone world, and it's a really good news story. The X-47 UCAS-D won the Collier Trophy for 2013. Pretty impressive, huh?
That's right. The Collier Trophy, it's an annual award, and it's probably the highest honor, the most prestige of kind of all of the awards that you can win in aviation.
It's the Oscar of aviation.
That's right. That's right. Now, this team was selected for developing and demonstrating the first unmanned autonomous air system operating from an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, we've talked about the X-47B on Airplane Geeks and on this show, but definitely it was the very first aircraft to operate from the deck of an aircraft carrier. It was flown from Patuxent River off of the aircraft carrier. And, of course, one of the most interesting things was kind of a failure, but really a success, was the X-47 realized it wasn't the proper approach angle for the deck of the carrier and flew itself around in an anti-collision avoidance. So it was a very successful test, so much so that the Navy, instead of retiring them like they wanted to, they are continuing to fly them as they develop the unmanned combat air system.
That's right. And the X-47B team is in good company, considering some of the past Collier Trophy winners. Just recently in 2012, the winner was NASA and the JPL Mars Science Laboratory for the Curiosity Mars lander and rover. Before that, in 2011, it was the Boeing Company for designing, building, delivering, and supporting the 787 Dreamliner. 2010, it was Sikorsky Aircraft Corporation for the Sikorsky X-2 technology demonstrator. So, again, this is a prestigious award. It's fantastic that this team has won it for 2013, and that's great news.
So I guess we should get on to our regular news break. How drones could have helped find Malaysia Air Flight 370. Of course, we've been not really dodging the subject on Airplane Geeks, but we've been trying to put it in perspective. But in fact, it's affecting the drone population, too.
In this article in Daily Finance, makes the point that, you know, we have drones, we have UAVs that could be capable of providing some support for search and rescue operations, like we see for Malaysia Flight 370. We have things like the AeroVironment Global Observer. There's the Lockheed Martin High Altitude Airship and even the Boeing Phantom Eye, and, of course, a lot of others. But right now, they're not being used for those kinds of missions.
Of course, all of those are in, I don't want to say test phase, but they're in pre-production, and they're all pretty much experimental aircraft. However, I could add one to that that's actually, which would have been the Global Hawk or the Triton, which is the Navy version of it, that they could have used. And one of the arguments is the long endurance, they could fly over the area. However, keep in mind that they are aircraft, and this area is notorious for really bad weather. In fact, we had a typhoon in the middle of the search. So it's not pie in the sky that maybe in future events, God, we hope that this doesn't happen again, but they'll be able to use UAVs. But the technology probably isn't ripe yet for using them in the search and rescue.
Now, that's over the water. When it comes to under the water searches, we see an interesting article from WBUR concerning the Bluefin 21 from Bluefin Robotics.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because we do talk about drones in other contexts. And this is going to be the drone that finds Malaysia Flight 370 and finds the 777. The Bluefin 21 is an AUV or a UUV, which is an autonomous underwater vehicle. And it's 18 feet long, kind of looks like a torpedo, and it has side scan radar that they will have it run back and forth in a search pattern under the water to try to find the airplane.
That's right. And those side scan units, they create kind of a composite or a mosaic image. It's not an optical image, but it's almost something that's kind of like an ultrasound. But that can be used for creating those undersea images that may be useful in locating the flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder. Hopefully that's that's how this search will end up.
Yeah, and actually Air France 447, this is how they found the aircraft, was using an autonomous underwater vehicle. And the search pattern just basically, now that they're starting to get pings and narrow it down, you can start, but it's a very slow process. This vehicle does not go very quickly because it's got to go slow to scan the whole bottom of the floor, and eventually, hopefully, they'll find the aircraft. So while Malaysia isn't using UAVs, it is using AUVs. So the drones are an important part of the search process.
All right, David, moving on to an item in The Guardian. We see that the Civil Aviation Authority, the CAA, has gone after and prosecuted someone for dangerous and illegal drone flying.
Yeah, the CAA is the UK's version of the FAA, and this guy deserves to be prosecuted on account of stupidity, but that's just my comment.
I think I agree with you.
He actually was flying the unmanned aircraft near a nuclear submarine testing facility. You know, if you're going to go fly a UAV and take pictures, don't go taking pictures of a nuclear facility, because that's going to do nothing but get you in trouble and give the rest of us a bad name.
And he's going to pay a price for it. The CAA went after him. They convicted him. The CAA says that they hope this conviction sends a message to recreational users of UAVs that, you know what, you're not exempt from aviation safety rules. So he's got some monetary fines coming his way, doesn't he?
800 pounds and 3,500 pounds. So, and he's crying poor, but the bottom line is in this case, I got to agree with the CAA. He was flying dangerously, and we've talked about we need to monitor our own, because it's people like this that news gets out, and then we have lots of people complaining that drones are deadly, illegal, etc. So,
right. It's hard to have sympathy for this guy. All right, David, how about some of the listener feedback we've received?
Absolutely. Just so you know, folks, we haven't forgot about the video of the week, but a lot of our news stories from feedback, you guys are sending in lots and lots of videos, so we can't pick just one this week, so we'll let you check the show notes to check some of the other videos that we're going to talk about later. So the first one comes from Steve. Dear UAV Digest, love the podcast. Keep up the great work. You've probably seen this already, but just in case, another Antipodean story with a bit of poetic license, thanks to our media friends. Well, Max, this story, I don't know how many versions of it we got, but it borders from the sublime to the absurd. Let's start off with River of Blood after drone hits Australian athlete.
There was an event, I guess a triathlon in Australia, and someone was covering the event, or at least part of it, with their little drone, and there was some kind of an issue. It kind of remains to be seen what the issue was, but the thing came down, hit one of the athletes, and injured her.
Right. There's a lot of versions of this story, depending, and we'd thank everybody down under. One of the, Steve sent us the article that started off with River of Blood. Tony sent us an article, same article, but the headline was Triathlete Injured as Drone Filming Race Falls to Ground. Triathlon Injured in Drone Incident. And CASA's Investigating Geraldton Drone Incident. So depending upon what news agency you decided to review that day was whether the drone fell out of the sky and basically lamed the woman, or it was just a scratch and a couple of stitches. And the owner of the drone, while not necessarily flying it legally, claims that his drone was hacked, which is another one of those stories that have come out of this event.
Yeah, that's one that's concerning, because it could be either that, you know, he's deliberately trying to deflect the blame away from himself, or it could be that he believes that that's what happened, and maybe that is what happened, and maybe something else caused the failure. We don't know. It would be interesting to see if CASA is able to address that directly. If it is a case of someone interfering with the transmission, the communication with a drone or its navigation, then that's kind of that's a whole other serious issue. But I think the fact remains that, you know, here again, there's someone who is filming an event using their multicopter or whatever, and operating it in a way that maybe gets great video footage, but it's not safe in the case of a failure.
We can't chalk this one up for them giving us a bad name, but it's poor technique, I guess. And please, folks, from down under, follow it up and see what CASA comes up with, because Max and I definitely want to keep our eye on this story. And there are a lot of things that show up now in the mainstream media, and this was one of those examples where it was very interesting how it was presented depending upon the newspaper, television, you know. As in our show notes, my co-host has quoted, nothing keeps the media from a good story, even if the facts are wrong. So we'll have to see what happens with this.
And we also heard from Bob in Northern Virginia. He passed along a link to something that Lehman Aviation is developing.
Yeah, the LA-100 is a flying platform for GoPro users. That isn't an RJ, a DJI Phantom.
That's right.
And actually, it's not a quadcopter or a multicopter. It actually is a fixed wing, ready to fly RTF aircraft.
That's right. It's supposed to be fully autonomous. Communication is via Wi-Fi, and I think they do that with a tablet or a smartphone or that kind of a thing. Now, this LA-100 is a short duration craft. They say just about 5 minutes of flight time, and you have the option. You can mount your GoPro on top of the wing, or you can mount it under the wing, depending on if you want vertical or horizontal images, or even you can mount two cameras at once and do both.
But I have to admit, it's a small device, but if you think about it, carrying two GoPro cameras, it's quite the hefty aircraft for as far as lifting capability goes. And it's only around 1 kilogram and 3 feet or 1 meter wingspan. So That's a lot of cameras for a little aircraft.
And the price on the website, it's stated, is about $1,000. They do have other models that are designed for longer missions. There's the LA-200, which goes for $2,500. And there's an LA-300, which runs about $5,000, and that's designed for long-range orthomosaic and DEM missions, digital elevation modeling.
Yeah, we got to add DEM to the dictionary there, Max.
Yeah, that's right. We need to get that published to our little acronym dictionary there.
And besides, you get the $5 word for orthomosaic also in this episode.
That's right.
So our next story was from Eric, and this one we'll preface with came out on April 1st.
Right. I didn't catch that at first.
E-waste quadcopter lifts your spirits while keeping costs down. This was from Hackaday.com, and Hackaday.com actually is a really interesting website, that, and we've actually used them a couple times already for stories where they talk about the daily hack, and this was their new quadcopter that they were using as a cost-saving message, you know, because some of us can't afford the multi-million dollar quadcopter. This was an interesting way of solving the problem, huh, Max?
Yeah, this is made out of bits and pieces that you might have lying around, things like plywood. The propulsion is via four PC fans, 140-millimeter regular old PC fans. Now, you might think, well, that's not going to lift any weight. Those things don't have enough thrust to do that. So in this article, they took care of that. And also included in this thing is a 24-volt DeWalt cordless tool battery, which drives these fans to 15,000 RPM, which gives it the lift, so they say.
And of course, you know, you can't go without you needing controls. It's running a multi-Wii control surface software using sensors from a Nintendo Wii remote, which, you know, we all have the Nintendo Wiis lying around. So this is a really well done article, and the photograph looks pretty cool, and somebody actually went to the trouble of building this, so it's definitely a very good April Fool's joke.
All right, something that's a little more serious came in from Tony. Tony's from Sydney, Australia, and he says, "G'day, gents." He sent along a link to a video of a DJI Phantom being used in Antarctica, and we'll put this link, of course, in the show notes. It's titled "Drones on Ice."
Yeah, and basically, I think we now have pretty much covered all of the continents with the DJI Phantom. I don't know if we've had an African one yet, but clearly the DJI Phantom is becoming a world-class observation drone. And it is kind of funny because I jokingly, after making the comment a week or so ago when we flew a DJI into a volcano, that maybe it needs to fly in Antarctica or the North Pole. And sure enough, Tony comes up with this. So clearly there are no bounds for the DJI Phantom, and I'm sure somewhere along the line it's going to show up on Mars taking pictures of the Curiosity rover.
Ooh, there's a nice one. Now, in this application, the Phantom is being used to study sea ice and also climate change. And part of the advantage here is that it lets scientists view much more territory than they could by other means, or at least easily by other means. They can stay in the, I guess, on the warm inside of the ship and fly the Phantom out there and transmit back video or capture video of the ice and do their studies that way. So it's a great application. Another example of how it's just a simple, relatively inexpensive device can provide huge benefit, in this case the study of sea ice.
We're rapidly becoming synonymous with drones is the DJI Phantom and the GoPro camera, both sort of revolutionary technologies in their own right, but sort of they come together now and make one super technology. And again, I'm really happy that we're now showing drone stories, and they're showing DJI Phantoms instead of Predators and Reapers, because it really would look really bad watching a predator taking pictures of sea ice. So moving on, we heard one from Fabio. "Hi, David and Max. My name is Fabio. I'm an expat architect working in Saudi Arabia and a pilot student in the U.S. working towards my PPL. So he's a listener of both shows, and he sent another video of the dolphin stampede in Wales off of Dana Point. and Maui. Now, Dana Point is one of my favorite places on California, and the dolphins sometimes come into the harbor. So they herd the dolphins out of the harbor using speedboats, and this is videotaped by a, guess what, DJI Phantom. But you get to watch the dolphins. It's kind of watching a corral and watching the boats corral and push the dolphins back out to sea, which is really kind of cool. And then, of course, whale watching. We know about that because of certain individuals in your household, huh, Max?
Yeah, this is another great video. This is almost artistic in a way, or like dance, something of that sort, just watching these dolphins and whales swimming and having that aerial vantage point. It's pretty spectacular. But Fabio also mentioned that he was in Washington, D.C., and that he wasn't able to visit the National Air and Space Museum at the Uberhazy Center just outside of Dulles Airport. But he says, but he'll try to join us there for Be a Pilot Day. So maybe just really quickly, David, we should mention that this is an annual event, again, just outside of D.C., next to the Dulles Airport, put on by the Smithsonian. It's called Become a Pilot Day, and it's June 14th. It's always Father's Day weekend, that Saturday, and is a fantastic opportunity to see the museum, but they also have a large number of aircraft that fly in just for the event, and you can talk to the pilots, walk around the aircraft, and there are other groups and organizations that come in and set up displays or, you know, other activities for the participants. And all of us at the Airplane Geeks podcast do this every year. We have, this will be, what, the fourth year we've been there, David?
Yep.
So stay tuned for that. We'll put some links in the show notes where you can learn more information. If you're going to be in or around the Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Northern Virginia, Maryland kind of region that weekend, or can plan to be, this is a really worthwhile event. And it's also a family event, so bring your, you know, your spouse if you have one, and your children if you have some of them as well, and everyone will have a good time.
It's our, quote, family reunion for the year. It's not often that Max and I get to record in the same room, but we'd Be a Pilot Day, and we might actually get some UAV content this year, because we want to promote this show as well as Airplane Geeks. So definitely links in the show notes, and we look forward to seeing you. And if you're going to make it, give us a shout out. Oh, one thing Max should mention is on that Saturday night, we usually have a social,
right,
for Airplane Geeks. You Dronetics are more than welcome. We usually have a bunch of us go out to dinner, swap stories, shake hands, and we'd love to meet you folks in person who are our listeners, especially for this show, because we haven't had a chance to meet you yet. So looking forward to that. Again, it's June 14th. So we'll move on to some more listener mail. Boy, we get a lot of it. This one was from Nathan. Hey, Max and David, wanted to thank you guys for producing a great show. I learned something new and important each episode and used as a good jumping point for UAS news and topics. He's going to be attending the Small Unmanned Systems Business Expo in San Francisco on May 8th and May 9th. And we talked to Nathan, and we're looking forward to him providing a report back to us, either audio or by thing, where he can talk about what he's going to see there. Fortunately, we can't go, but we do definitely want to hear about it. Likewise, if you have an event like that in your area and you go, send us either a little voice recording or some notes so we can talk about it, because we want to promote that in the area. Huh, Max?
Yeah, that's for sure. And I have a little, well, it's not so little, but another website, 30,000feet.com. And I have a UAV page on there, which I'm in the process of building up, lots of resources relating to this topic. And one of the subsections in there is upcoming events, which includes things like conferences and that sort of thing. So you'll find some of those in there. But if you're aware of others that can be added to that list, you know, please let us know. I created a shortcut for that. If you want to get to that page, just go to the uavdigest.com/directory, and it'll take you straight there. And again, if you have any other resources that you'd like to add to that just contact us and we'll be happy to do that. So then we also heard from Bill. He sent us an article. This is Drone Saves Puppy Trapped in Stony Creek Swamp. This is a really sweet story. In this case, there was a little beagle, a one-year-old beagle, and he was in a muddy swamp in Connecticut, lost in the cattails, and they couldn't find him until the fire department brought up a DJI Phantom to help search for the dog. Well, the dog heard the Phantom overhead and started making noise, barking, whatever, which led the rescuers to him, saving the little guy. And my comment, I think, to Bill when he sent this was, I just dare the FAA to go after these guys because, if they start blasting someone for using a drone for rescuing a lost puppy, there's no way to win that one.
Yeah, thanks, Bill, for other reasons, just to drop that in there. But this is definitely one of those win one for the droniacs or the dronetics.
And interestingly enough, David, you'll recall that some episodes ago we talked about a DJI Phantom that was used in a quarry fire. This was in a fire in January, and there were some. Remember, there was some dynamite in that quarry.
Yeah, was this the same DJI Phantom?
It definitely was. So this, and I didn't know that when I first started reading this story until I looked into it a little bit, and I started thinking, wow, this sounds like some of the same kind of people involved. And it was. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little addition to the story.
I wonder if that DJI Phantom is getting kill marks, like rescuing a puppy, little puppy on the side, and a couple of sticks of dynamite. Our next email was from Jake. Hey, guys, love your podcast. I love the fact that everybody's starting off, Max, I'm really proud of what we've done because everybody starts off their emails to us with they love it, they like it, they can't wait to listen to us, and that makes us feel really good. And Jake is a farmer in the Midwest, and he's starting to build his own drone. And, of course, we've talked a lot about using drones for farmers, and that's going to be definitely a wide-open thing. And he's talked specifically about the NDVI indexes, Normalized Difference Vegetation Index, and he was wondering where he could look for software for geophoto and stitch pictures together. If you have any ideas, send them to us so we can get them over to Jake because he wants to use it for his farm. And he has a sizable farm. He says 2,000 to 3,000 acres.
Jake also asked if there were places where people like he could go and meet others in his area to get together and talk about ideas and things about building drones. And we responded back. We know of a couple of UAV user groups. There's one in L.A., one in New York. There's a New England user group and one in Texas. Those are the only ones that I know about, David. I don't know if you know of any others or if our listeners do.
There's actually one in D.C.
Okay. So we'd like to collect all of those and, again, include them as some reference material, reference links for the benefit of everyone. So if you know of other user groups, either online, I guess, but more specifically in meet space where folks can get together and have conversations about these things, send them to us, feedback@theuavdigest.com.
And the next one was from Tim. Tim was at the World Aviation Training Conference, WATS, and actually got to talk to the FAA Administrator Director Huerta. And his comment was, on the challenges of UAS rulemaking in an environment where the non-aviation public is wanting to take out-of-the-box and fly mentality as technology moves a bit too fast. Unfortunately, he didn't get the answer he really wanted, did he, Max?
No, he said Mr. Huerta stuck to the script and only commented on the UAS roadmap that was released in December, and we know about that, and the testing locations that have been established, the six of those, we know about that as well. So Tim says, I didn't really think a high-profile speaker would speak off the cuff, but his lack of any info newer than 4 months makes me think these guys are not only behind the power curve, i.e. the NTSB ruling, but they are hopelessly behind the power curve. So he says, just a gut feeling. Yeah, these kind of guys are good at, well, saying things when they need to say things and not saying things when they don't want to say things or can't. The FAA is kind of in a hard spot here to be responsive to the demands of all of us.
But we needed to talk about the FAA because otherwise we wouldn't have a drinking game.
I really got
to give Tim credit. I mean, he did try to reach out for us and talk to Director Huerta, but he's in a position where he's supposed to be, you know, he's designed, as you say, Max, he's designed to provide answers. And I'm sure his handlers very much would want to keep him on script. So our next story is...
Oh, from Ron. This is a great one. Ron sent us a link to a YouTube video, or a video that's up on YouTube. It's called Game of Drones. This is about mounting paintball guns on UAVs. Oh, man. Ron says, you may have already seen this, but it seems you can be fairly accurate shooting from a UAV, even hit another UAV on the fly. If you can do this with a paintball gun on a UAV, not much of a step to other weapon types. Which, yeah, is true and kind of scary. This is a, I love this. In my dreams, David, you know, I would love to create something that has a paintball gun mounted on it. And I can dream up all kinds of things I would love to do to other, well, others with a paintball gun, you know, dropping out of the sky, coming from nowhere.
Folks, we're now hearing the dark side of Max Flight.
Yeah.
This is Darth Flight you're being introduced to.
That's right.
This is fun, but there's a warning out there. You know, we don't really want people to give us droniacs a bad name. And this is, like you said, one step away from, you know, all we need is somebody to figure out how to put a real gun, not a paintball gun, on there, and then we're in trouble.
Unfortunately, I think someday, somewhere, someone is likely to try that. Meantime, and finally to wrap it up, because, boy, we've got a lot of other feedbacks, but we really need to kind of watch our time. We heard from Bo. He says, hey, David and Max, not sure if you guys have come across this story in the Wall Street Journal about a Texas search and rescue organization that is fighting back against the FAA's order to stop using UAVs during missing persons searches. So this is a Wall Street Journal article, FAA unswayed by do-good drones. This is about Texas EquiSearch.
Yeah, we talked about Texas EquiSearch in the past. They started out as a team that for people who are missing, they rode horses to cover large areas to do searches. And then they started using a drone, and the FAA said, you can't do that. And they said, why not? And the FAA said, because it's not allowed. But they're actually taking up the charge, and I'm all for this one, because there's way too many search and rescue missions that people are trying to be helpful, and they're not allowed by the FAA. I mean, and we understand the concerns. Like in Australia, we've already had a drone that was trying to be helpful almost hit an aircraft doing a firebomb. So I get the FAA's concern, but in a matter of necessity, if you can cover the space that we talk about with flying a drone to find a lost puppy or, more importantly, a human being, they should be able to do it.
All right, David, I think we better wrap this one up. You've been listening to episode 35 of the UAV Digest. You can find show notes at theuavdigest.com. Or you can use the shortcut, theuavdigest.com/35, to go right to this episode. And you'll find links to all the articles, videos, and companies, and everything that we mentioned in this podcast.
Don't forget our Cafe Press store.
That's right. In fact, there's a link on the webpage to that up at the top. I think it's the link is Swag, and they'll take you right to that store. As we mentioned, if you want to send us an email, it's feedback@theuavdigest.com. And we're also on Twitter as UAV Digest, and on Facebook, same, UAV Digest.
And Google Plus, the UAV Digest. So, Max, I guess that wraps it up. Hard to believe this time last year we were coming up with the idea for this show, and now we're 35 episodes into it. I look forward to Thursday nights every night. So thank you for being a great co-host.
Oh, well, and thank you, David, for pushing this along and making it happen. Really appreciate it.
So this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.